Thanks for coming, everybody. And I'm actually doing someone else's presentation this morning, my colleague and friend Paul English, who was unable to come here and do this himself. So any errors or omissions are mine, actually, for being a little bit ignorant. Although I have helped collaborate a little bit on this project. This is a wonderful project by the California Department of Public Health, as well as other colleagues in California who've been working on issues of climate vulnerability, as well as cumulative impacts analysis and environmental justice questions.
I'm worried about your back with that mic.
That's all right. So here's the proverbial no conflicts, and which I'm not going to waste time reading. And the question is, what is climate change population vulnerability screening? And some of us are starting to work on these issues, and I think the basic elements are really thinking about how we integrate data on demographics, geographic locations of potential hazards, and portray this spatially in ways that are transparent as well as scientifically valid, and integrate metrics that we think capture questions of climate change vulnerability, such as extreme weather events, flooding, sea level rise, wildfires. And the reason why we're really starting to think about this is because climate change issues are already happening, and we're looking to develop climate change adaptation strategies, particularly public health departments at different levels, and to really also think about not only how we make communities more resilient and able to adapt to climate change, but also how we strategically target mitigation strategies. So there have been previous efforts by people who have published great work, including a friend and colleague, Colleen Reed, who published an article in Environmental Health Perspectives. This is by no means an exhaustive list. My friends and colleagues at Natural Resources Defense Council have also published some great work on this. And people have looked at it both locally and within cities, more statewide, as well as globally, trying to, again, spatially portray, using mapping strategies, issues of community vulnerability to climate change. This is a metric to help us wrap our brains around how we might think about population vulnerability in terms of climate change threats, thinking about metrics of sensitivity, including demographics of communities, demographic makeup, thinking about the urban landscape and land use, thinking about issues of cumulative impacts, which get at metrics of social and health vulnerability measures within neighborhoods, pollution measures and modeling, and locations of potential hazards, both large and small. Other metrics include measures of adaptation capacity, use and access of air conditioning, access to transit, car ownership, and other community resources. All of these are data measures that we are concerned about to really get at the question of population vulnerability to climate change. So Dr. English's project focused on two study areas, looking at Fresno County and Los Angeles County, to examine this question heuristically and how we might get at this question in California. Fresno County is located in the Central Valley of California. It's very largely Latino population. A high proportion of people there are living under the poverty line, highly agricultural, very susceptible to extreme weather events, although that population is also very used to extreme heat events because they occur quite frequently. Conversely, in Los Angeles, again, it has very varied climate, and it has different kinds of threats related to climate change, including, because it's on the coast, questions of sea level rise. Paul and colleagues looked at a method that we had developed and published recently called the Environmental Justice Screening Method, where we integrated 23 indicators at the census tract level and divided them into three categories. So our mapping strategy, which I'll be talking more about tomorrow morning if you're interested in that, but it's also an open access paper that's quoted down there. You can take a look if you're having trouble accessing it. I can make it available to you. But essentially, we took three metrics of cumulative impacts, looking at hazard proximity and land use, several data sources for that, data sources on air pollution exposures and associated health risks, and then different metrics of social and health vulnerability, overlaid them on a map, and accumulated them using the same scoring technique that I'm going to be using today to describe the climate change metrics that Dr. English developed. So for the climate change layer, they basically added another category, a fourth category of climate change vulnerability, which included measures related to central air conditioning ownership, land cover, i.e. tree canopy coverage, and impervious land use, which gets at heat island risks, transit, wildfire risk, flood risk, and proportion of elderly living alone, which is the metric of social isolation. And these data were ranked by quintiles and then mapped at the census tract level for Fresno and LA. So here's the map looking at the proportion of households that have access to central air conditioning. The green means that these are neighborhoods where access to central AC is high. The red is where people are living who have no access at all. And you can see that there's different pockets in places. And interestingly enough, a place like Pasadena, which is very inland and can get extremely hot, Burbank, this area has pretty high risk. And then some places closer along the coastal areas. In Fresno, you can see these census tracts are much larger because population density is much lower. It's a very rural area. But again, you can see sort of these mapping of AC ownership can sort of highlight to you where you're going to have households that are not going to be able to immediately deal with extreme heat event in terms of cooling. This is looking at sea level rise, which they didn't do that for Fresno for obvious reasons, but you can see the coastal areas and sort of how far inland sea level rise appears in terms of super high risk, low-lying areas. And many of these areas, people can say, well, there's a lot of wealthy people living there along the coast, but even in the Long Beach area, there are actually a fair number of low-income households that are there. This looks at flooding risk in terms of based on historical flooding data, and so there are definitely pockets of Los Angeles County based on FEMA data that appear to be at high levels of risk for flooding. In terms of where people live, that varies a lot. So these are areas where these are areas where fewer people live, and these are more highly populated areas. But this is based on historical flooding data. And then this is average risk of their urban wildfire interface, again, in Los Angeles. And you can see they're huge swaths of places where people are really living at the urban wildfire interface. And LA's had some pretty intense wildfires over the last years. This is a big issue. And this is not taking into account any issues related to the air quality effects of wildfires. This is looking at impervious surfaces. These are forested areas, a lot of this up here, which is why it's low risk. And you can see that LA has a lot of cement and conversely, not a lot of tree canopy. LA is not a very tree-lined place, and it's pretty widespread. But that does raise opportunities, for example, in terms of interventions. This is looking at the accumulation of all of those climate change vulnerability metrics that I showed you when you score them all together, which areas and census tracts pop up to the top. And as you can see, areas of western Sacramento and this area in the more central part of the county and also parts of the city, when you accumulate all of those metrics together, pop up to the top and might be draw attention in terms of screening and targeted interventions. This is for Los Angeles. And again, this is accumulating all of the climate change metrics. Again, LA included the sea level rise, while Fresno did not include that one metric. So that's one major difference. And then this is zooming in, looking at the same data where you can get a more finer grain look at the different neighborhoods. And so you can see places like Santa Monica, which are more wealthy, a lot of this is driven by the sea level rise metric. And then this is looking at the climate change metrics combined with the other three categories of social and health vulnerability, air pollution and health risk, proximity to hazards and land use that were available on this other environmental justice screening method to get a holistic approach to looking at climate change vulnerability in combination with other cumulative impact metrics. Finally, they did sort of a quick and dirty demographic analysis of kind of who bears the burden of climate change vulnerability. And what this shows is for Los Angeles County, African Americans and Latinos are predominantly the ones, or have very high rates of each group that are living in the highest risk neighborhoods. So 46% and 46% of African Americans and 36% of Latinos are living in the highest risk categories compared to 30% of white residents. And in Fresno, the disparity is particularly in the highest vulnerability area is also quite intense. We have nearly 50% of African Americans, 45% of Latinos who are residing in the highest risk categories compared to 26% of white residents in that county. Finally, they did a sort of quick and dirty correlation looking at what is the relationship between the relative risk of emergency visits for heat-related illnesses by vulnerability score. So for Fresno, you can see that for people living in the highest risk census tracts, the relationship is probably the strongest. But there's not sort of an obvious kind of dose-response relationship here, so it's pretty noisy. Here it's noisy too, although you start to see a higher level here for Category 5. So you see a kind of weak and kind of noisy relationship with emergency room visits. And I think this is in part due to the fact that this does not only include sort of the metrics that are directly related to heat stress and heat illness issues, and that further analysis might reveal a much stronger relationship if you just focused on those heat island risk metrics to see look at the comparison. So in conclusion, screening tools are useful, I think, for identifying as a first pass those communities that are at high risk for climate change impacts. And at a time when we're facing pretty significant challenges, strong evidence of climate change already occurring, I think this is useful. I think also this data helps us see that the burdens of climate change vulnerability are disproportionately falling on communities of color and low-income communities, and that climate change also opposes an additional risk on top of the cumulative impacts related to social and health vulnerability, as well as exposures to environmental hazards that we need to take into consideration when we're thinking about how to target mitigation efforts for climate change. There's been some really good work done by colleagues here at NRDC indicating that reductions in greenhouse gases are also going to reduce pollution levels. So this offers us an opportunity to see where we might want to target greenhouse gas reductions to the communities that need it the most. And we're constantly trying to improve this tool, not only by integrating additional metrics, but also to get more data where we can project vulnerability into the future. Right now we have kind of snapshots in time and what's going on now. And I just wanted to acknowledge the colleagues that have provided data and lots of advice on this project. And for those of you who are interested, there's a report available that shows a lot more of this data. If you email me, I can figure out a way to make it available to you. Thank you.
Rachel, why don't you stay up for a minute?